Blog Talk Radio.
You are now rocking to the beats with the East Coast music mogul, DJ Mike Q, Queen Beat Productions, DJMikeQ.com. Mike Q.
Bitch. The Barbarossa of Cinder-Top. Legendary Nicole. Overall East Coast Mother Con. My life. My story. My dreams. Are you ready?
Hello, hello, America. Hello, everybody out there on the phone lines and everybody all across Radio Land. Tonight is Nicole's night. Tonight we're going to be doing things a little bit different. Hi to everybody in the chat room. Thank you all for listening. Tonight we're going to do things a little bit different because if you haven't realized that the days have changed and Monday night will be Kelly's and Tuesday night will be myself. And Wednesdays will be the state of emergency with the CEO, Jasmine Couture. So tonight, as we officially coming back to give you guys a full setting of what's going to be going on every Tuesday to be coming, I'm going to start off the show. We all know I do my interviews, and I interview people, and I have hot topics and just different situations that we can come on the floor and, you know, be able to express and say what we need to say. But tonight, for my return, I'm going to be the one that's being interviewed before we move on into any further interviews. And out of my interview will come my the topic of tonight as well. If we don't get to it, we'll be thinking and living outside of the box. So tonight I'm going to share myself with you guys because I think the only way you can actually be able to help somebody is to tell somebody your story or to tell somebody your testimony. And I have I'm so passionate about bridging the gap and bringing the old to the new and the young children to respect the old children and the old children to acknowledge the young children. So I want to just be able to express my feelings in this platform. Tuesdays, every Tuesday's night will be the Sister For Real show, and we will do the same thing as we would be doing on Wednesday night, but we're now going to be doing it on Tuesday nights. So I'm going to be getting interviewed today, and like you know how it goes, I will be interviewing R.R., the pioneer icon, R.R. Chanel, the voice of reason, who is also now the co-host on my Tuesday night shows, will be interviewing me. And if we have enough time, we're going to be going straight into out of the interview into the topic of hand, thinking and living out the box. I think that's something that I'm strongly dealing with. And it's just a work in progress, so I would like that to be the runoff of my interview, is thinking and doing things out of the box. I haven't been here with you guys because sometimes you have to just think and be out of the box. Things get overwhelming. We do have a life. We have things that we should be concerned about. We do a lot of talking, but we don't do a lot of taking care of ourselves and putting ourselves in order like we should. So I want to not be that person to be able to express what people should do and where they should go, and I not utilize those things in my own personal life. So that's why I have not been here. I miss the show. I miss all you people. I got all the emails and all the inboxes on Facebook, and kudos to y'all. Thank you very much for showing me all the love that you have. And my purpose in being on the show is to be the voice, and it's to be the voice real, like, you know, real. And I'm coming from the inside being real as possible. I can be messy, and I can be positive. Oh, good. Okay, so I'm going to keep Pioneer R.R. Chanel come on the phone. So without any further ado, please welcome my co-host, the voice of reason, the icon Pioneer R.R. Chanel.
Good evening, radio listeners, and to everyone who hasn't tuned into the show before, but tonight is your first time tuning in. Tonight, we're going to turn the tables on the host of the show, Nicole Kahn. Tonight, we're going to get a chance to hear Nicole's story and get to know a little bit more about the personal side of Nicole. So I want you to call your house members, your house mothers, your house fathers, your girlfriends, your Judys, whatever you call them, and tell them to tune in tonight, because this is an exclusive interview that no one will ever get a chance to hear again. But tonight is the night Nicole is saying that it's no holds barred. I can ask her anything that I want to ask her, and we are going to make it hot because we all know that everybody wants to know about Nicole. So, Nicole, how are you feeling this evening?
I'm great. I had a long, long day. I think my job never ends. It's just being a mother, a house mother, and just a person. So I'm a little exhausted and overwhelmed and nervous because I did say it's no holds barred.
Right, but you know what?
As much
just
as they
take
want,
a deep breath, and you know what? Let's just go with the flow. So we're going to start off by just trying to get to know Nicole. So just tell us a little bit about your upbringing as far as what type of family you come from, as far as a double-parent family, a single-parent family. How many siblings do you have, and those things of that nature as far as your childhood?
Okay, well, first of all, I pretty much have a dysfunctional family. I mean, I know a lot of people can relate. I lived in a home with my mother. I am the only child by my father. My mother had four other boys, and my father had six other girls. My mother and father never lived together at all. Her kids after me, you know, her and their father has had a relationship, but my father and my mother never had a relationship. So coming up with my mother and my father and being in two different sides, I kind of felt like the black sheep, but I was the oldest. And my mother had five boys. There's only two of us left, me and my brother. The other three died in a fire years ago in 1985 when I was young, which was the first tragic thing, I guess, that ever happened to me, was that there was a big house fire, and three of my brothers actually died, and me and my little brother, we made it. Later on down the line, all the other six sisters that was on my father's side, we have nice relationships, and I've grown to communicate with them, and, you know, they accept my lifestyle, and as for my mother's side as well.
So can you say as a child that because your family was dysfunctional that it caused you to have mixed emotions in regards to growing up as a kid?
Yes, absolutely. I had a lot of low self-esteem. And my mother back then, you know, parents don't understand how crucial they be when speaking to their kids. That's why I try to be so careful. But she used to say, you look like your black, ugly daddy. And growing up, I would feel like that. And it was my father's mother who would come along and make me acknowledge my skin and my color of my tone and my teeth and just little things that made me beautiful. But I always felt like the black sheep, but I always was the responsible one as far as my mother because she had her issues. So I took care of my little brothers. After the three boys died, I guess that's it. My mother's spinning downhill. So, of course, you had all the drug addiction and the abusive relationship. So it was me pretty much taking care of my little brother and raising him and going to school.
At what age were you when you started to realize that you had to take control and become the adult in the family?
I would say about 10. About 10 years old. It was pretty much after the fire and after the hospital and the ordeal. So I was about 8 when that happened. So about 10 years old.
Okay. So at the age of 10, you took on an adult responsibility as far as starting to raise your brother, you said?
Yes, I would have to go. Like, I lived in East New York. That's where I'm originally from. I was born and raised. I forgot to say that in East New York. I mean, Brooklyn, New York. I was born in Kings County Hospital. I lived in Brooklyn practically all my life until I was about 16. So in East New York, you know, they had all the supermarkets. I would pack bags and, you know, feed my brother and do all the things that my mother couldn't do because she had an addiction at the time. So I would just be being a fender for my little brother.
Okay. And at this time in your life, were you still a butch queen? Can I safely say that?
I think for a long time, I knew very young that I wanted to be
a
girl.
Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to that.
Okay.
At this
I don't know.
Time,
I would consider at 10, I guess I was doing what everybody was doing, helping your cousins or, you know, I really didn't understand what is it that I like, but I knew I liked it that. So
So what age was it that you started to realize your sexuality? Or did you actually know that there might be some gay tendencies in your life, or that you knew that you had gay tendencies?
I think I pretty much knew it. If you allow me to say that, how I knew it was another thing. You know, a lot of people talk about when they got molested and, you know, what they has done to them and everything. That my mother had a disabled brother who molested me several times. And me, I actually kind of liked it. So I knew then that it was wrong.
Okay,
and was,
let me ask you this. So you're saying that when you got molested the very first time, you kind of enjoyed it?
Right. I don't know. I did.
Did you enjoy it because it was the only type of affection that you could receive at that age, or that someone finally showed you some attention in a way that you hadn't been shown attention? Or did they basically show you attention before they did that so that they could earn your trust?
No, I don't, but because my uncle was disabled himself, like he was what you call modified retarded. Not retarded, but slow. So,
well, he couldn't have been too slow if he molested you.
Yeah, well, I don't think I had any. I don't think I had any or thought about any of those. Me. What is that? Hello?
Okay. Yeah, we're good.
Okay, I don't think I thought about it in that time. I just thought that I liked it, you know, like,
okay.
And I didn't tell, you know.
What is that?
I don't know.
So anyway, moving on, let's talk about. Is that a special benefit?
Oh, okay, I'm not sounding clear. I'm going to hang up and call back in. Okay.
While we're waiting for Nicole to come back, don't forget that you can listen to Tins and Chop each and every Monday night. And on Tuesday nights, we have Nicole doing her Sister to Sister for Real show. And we also have the CEO, Jasmine Couture, with the state of emergency and the topics of the ballroom and things that we need to straighten out in the ballroom, or the things that we need to try to make better in the ballroom. So we have a full calendar Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday that you can tune in and listen to the radio show, which we all think is very informative, and we definitely try to keep it real. So, Nicole, are you
okay? Yeah, like I was saying, the first time, I hope everybody can hear me clearly. It was told that my phone sounded low, so I hope everybody can hear me clearly. So, yeah, around that time, after, you know, pretty much that happened before the fire. So I think I was young. I was probably about 8 years old when it happened. And I just knew you wasn't supposed to tell, but I didn't think, you know, I don't know. Probably as I grew older, I learned to figure out the issues that, you know, may have came from it and everything. But I didn't feel like that.
You can actually say that that was your first ever sexual encounter with someone of the same sex?
Yes, I do think. Yes, the first ever is, yeah, the first time I ever had any type of sexual encounter was with the same sex.
Okay.
Yes.
And once again, so that our viewers can also, our listeners, I should say, can also get a little bit more understanding of what high school did you go to?
I went to Beach Channel High School in Far Rockaway.
Okay, and you went there through what, ninth grade?
I did all the way into the last grade. And the last grade, of course, was the year I came out. So when that year came, when that came about, that was, you know, like every other normal child, you know, just go and then you're in the village and you're not taking going into school anymore. And then I actually moved back home with my mother because for a short period of time, I was always, you know, the bread, doing what I needed to do and being a responsible one. And I remember one time I was pretty grown and womanly like when I was young because I took care of my children, my brothers and stuff. And my mother wasn't around and my family actually called child services on her. So at that point, I was probably about 12 now. And I went through the foster home system for maybe about a couple of years, but I knew at the end of the road grandma would be waiting. And grandma was waiting, and I lived with my grandmother from about 12 years old all the way into me coming out.
And when you say coming out, was that when you had your first experience with realizing that there was another world out there that you could become a part of?
Yeah, absolutely.
What was your very first gay experience as far as knowing that there were other people like you and you could feel comfortable with yourself?
My grandmother had me under foster care, and we had these classes in Wall Street that I had to go to. By that time, I was in high school, and I would go up to these tutoring classes, and I would have to get on the train to go up there, and I would get on the train to come back. So one day, the first time I got off the train to use the bathroom, and I got up at Christopher Street, and I went into Washington Square Park. And when I went into Washington Square Park to use the stalls or whatever, I'm peeing, and I realized that everybody is there looking at, each other's penises, and they were just standing there looking at it. So, I stood, mind-boggled for a minute, and I left, and I went home. Of course, every day after that, I went back there, and eventually I met somebody that rode that train home with me, the A train home with me, and then I...
What was your curiosity, not to cut you off, but I will interject every now and then, but I just want to know, what was your curiosity that drew you back, and at this time, were you still dressing as a boy when you were doing this?
Yeah, I was still a boy, and... I mean, my curiosity is something, I guess, deep down inside. See, for me, deep down inside, I always knew who I was. It just wasn't allowed. So, I used to have thoughts about being doobies, big earrings, long, on the corner with boys. I used to think that. So when I acknowledged that and realized that, ran across that, I guess I liked it, and I just kept coming back. It was just a sexual thrill for me, and I would just come back there every time I had to go home. When I'm on my way back to Brooklyn, I would stop there and I would go to the bathroom and then I would go home.
And did you have a best friend at 12 years old that you used to share these experiences with?
No, I didn't.
So you basically did everything in secret by yourself?
And on my own, yeah. When I got a little bit older, yeah, but at 12, no. And that happened to me, finally tumbling along the gay career, the Washington Square Park. That was about when I was about 14 years old. So I did that until I met somebody. And, of course, I had a girlfriend in high school, and her name was Georgette. And she was light-skinned and real pretty. And we used to go together and we used to have fun. And one day after me doing that, going to Washington Square Park, it was almost like she knew, because we went to school and she said, I wanted to take you somewhere. And she took me to what was the NutriZone, but when I went there, it was Bratz. And she took me down there to Bratz. It was almost like she was bringing me out the closet for me to only find out that she was a lesbian herself.
Oh, okay. So y'all shared something. Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And she brought me basically there, and that was it. I was there, that was it.
And when she became like your lesbian friend, you and her used to basically hang out together and try to like experiment in different places such as the Village and things of that nature?
No, because, see, she started off as my girlfriend, who I think spooked my tea. And when she spooked my tea, she basically showed me the way, and we hung out maybe a few times after that. And then I met my dear friend to this day, Katrina. And that was it for me. I met Katrina, and I met Sylvan, and all the people that
were
in.
Well, where did you...
Brett.
You're rushing, and I really want people to get a little clarity on what you're telling them in your story. So I'd really like to know, at what point in time did you discover the Village and start to meet these people that may have introduced you to the ballroom scene, which brought you to the ballroom scene?
It was 1994. I was in 11th grade, and I was 15 years old, going on 16.
And
yeah.
Who was the first gay person that you met that was a part of the ballroom scene? If you can remember.
Well, at the time when I met people, I didn't know about the ballroom scene. So when I met them, because Katrina, Selvin, those people were the first, and they were a part of the ballroom scene, so I would say them, yeah. They would be Katrina, Selvin, and a few others, Lisa, Jay. You know, they were a part of the ballroom scene that I had not known about yet.
Okay. What struck your curiosity to venture into the whole transgender formation as far as becoming a butch queen in drag? What made you come out as far as saying, you know what, I'm really tired of being a boy, I really want to start living my truth, and I'm going to just go ahead and do it?
Well, when I was coming up, I was never really Banji. You know, I dressed it like a boy and everything, but once I, you know, tumbled along the village and brats and stuff, the S-curls and stuff started coming out, the shaping and forming your hair with, you know, curls from shampoo and stuff. So being in brats and then became Nutrizone, I had a lot to learn from a lot of different people, Mahogany and all the different people that were in there that did those things. So I stayed a butch queen, I guess, thinking that I couldn't do it and that I wouldn't look right to being able to do it. And I just think that once I got comfortable with my mom, and that my mother knew, but who didn't know, and I mean, she always knew, but she didn't know as far as my mouth until I was actually in the lifestyle. And when I got as comfortable with my mother and my family and stuff, I just decided to start moaning. I moaned a little while I was a butch queen. So my grandmother wouldn't be upset with me, and I would go see her, and I would peel out of them. But I didn't have big breasts and everything. I just was moaning, and I moaned for maybe about 6 or 7 months before I started just playing in drags, like
okay,
just
so
really doing
before,
it.
Before we'll come back to that, but what I'd like to ask you is, how did you come to the understanding of what type of gay man you were?
Well, after coming out and seeing other gay men, I was able to help understand myself, and I wasn't masculine, and I wasn't, like, even though I was tall and it was expected for me, I was tall, I was dark-skinned, and a lot of other gay people thought that I should be the boy or, quotations, the top. I just didn't feel like that. I've always felt like a girl. So I've always felt that just in me, you know, I would have these long things on my keys and these things, just little different, lots and lots of jewelry, you know, just little things that indicated that I wanted to be a woman. And I just got the courage one day to do it after witnessing, you know, the life and people who's doing in their transformation and people who was just, you know, started taking hormones and stuff. And I just decided to do it.
Let's hold those thoughts right there. We're going to go into a commercial break, and then we'll be back with the interview with Nicole Kahn's life story.
Kiki Model Mom Chanel presents Two Events in One Night, Something for Everyone. Kansas City's first stud and femme exotic review show. Special guests, Carter from Los Angeles and Treasure from Houston, Texas. Right after, the April Fool's Ball, grand prize, house with the most trophies, $1,000. Mini grand, open door performance with a prop, $200, as well as 15 other categories with trophies and prizes. That's Saturday, March 31st in Kansas City. Doors open at 10 p.m., LSS at midnight. April Fool's, don't be late or you'll gag. All past categories are first. Location, Truman Hall, 7820 East Truman Road, Kansas City. $15 all night, VIP table 35, comes with a bottle and food. 18 to enter, 21 to drink. That's the Sudden Some Exotic Review Show and the April Fool's Ball. For more info, contact Gigi, Model Mom Chanel Carrington on Facebook. That's Gigi, Model Mom Chanel Carrington on Facebook. April Fool's.
B2C, Tempted to Touch presents Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous Ball. Sunday, March 24th, 2012, 3 p.m. to 10 p.m. at the Fort Cheyenne Casino and Event Center, 2428 East Cheyenne Avenue, North Las Vegas, Nevada. Hosted by the legendary mother, Divine Chanel. Commentated by the icon, Jack Mizrahi. We are proud to say we offer the biggest cash prizes on the West Coast. No tea, no shade, no competition. over $6,000, 3 years and counting. Categories include mini grand prize, $500 open to all runway, $500 open to all realness, $500 open to all best dress, $1,000 open to all face. Carla, you understand it. And 8 other $100 categories. Grand prize number one, $1,500 open to all Vogue. Grand prize number two, $1,500 open to all sex virus. Get ready. T2T, Tempted to Touch presents Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous Ball.
Okay, so we're back with Nicole, and we're doing a Turn the Tables, and we're interviewing Nicole Kahn today and getting her life story. So, Nicole, you've told us a great deal about you, and now we're just going to move it up a little bit, and I'd like to find out if you can remember the first ball that you ever went to.
I would believe the first ball, I want to say it was at the Mark Ballroom, and to be really correct, I'm not sure if it was a Chanel or a Bazaar ball, but I think it was either a Chanel or a Bazaar ball, and I came out in 94, so my first ball I did go to was in 94, the first ball I walked was 95, so yes. Yeah, okay. It was at the Mark Ballroom, and it was either a Chanel or a Bazaar ball.
And did you come to spectate, or were you ready to, like, walk the runway?
No, I came to spectate. I was just, you know, the girl on the side with all my other girlfriends, and we all was clapping for all the people like yourself and all the icons and pioneers of today.
And were there any role models at that time that you, like, really looked at and said, oh, my God, I really would like to be like this person, or I think that person is so over, you know, are there – any girls and guys that you remember back then?
I mean, in the beginning of coming out, no. Of course, I always, you know, I felt everyone out, and I was there, and I was just spectating, and I thought Danielle was beautiful, and I thought Tanae was beautiful, and I thought the Chanel girls and the Allure girls were beautiful, but then, no, because, you know, I was the girl on the outskirts, and when you come out in this lifestyle, it's like steps, you know, it's like steps, so when I came out, I was just, you know, from the pier, the Nutrisol, hanging out in the village and stuff. You wasn't allowed, you know, to be in the elite club yet. But as maybe a year went by, my first person would be Ashley Icar.
Okay. And at this time that you started going to your first ball, you started patronizing balls thereafter?
Yes. I attended a lot of balls at the Mark Ballroom. And I would go when I seen the battles with, you know, Danielle and Octavia and all the battles that used to be really hot on that floor, but just spectating. I wasn't even a part of a house until about 90.
So as a spectator back in the 90s, did you find that the balls were more contained and more fun, and that even though there were still drugs, it wasn't as pertinent as it is now?
Absolutely. I think the balls, I just thinking about it brings a real big smile to my face. I felt like it was worth cutting school and disobeying grandma just to go out and be there at the Mark Ballroom and getting off at 14th Street to be able to be a part of that crowd. Yes, it was fun. It was so
and just
enjoyable.
Just to backtrack just a little, because you did mention you did say school again. Were you able to complete high school?
I didn't even complete it. I left high school and I started working.
Okay.
I started working.
And did you ever have any intentions of going back to get your GED or high school diploma or anything like that?
Of course, I set out a lot of times and throughout my gay life and be out throughout the lifestyle to do so. But of course, being consumed to the box, I didn't get to do it along until my later years. I actually went back to college and actually still am in the process of fulfilling not just getting the GED, but to be getting an associate's degree as well. Staying focused.
But not to be contradicting. Not to be contradicting, because it is your story, but I don't think that you can go to college without a high school diploma.
Yes, you can.
But not unless you're going to college so that you can get your high school diploma.
You go to college, it's like this. You go to college and you go as a regular college student. When you reach a certain amount of credits, they will hand you your GED or your high school equivalency diploma, and you will move on continuously until you get further and with your gain enough credits for your associate's.
Okay. So let's move forward to now you and Ashley have become friends. Can I say that that was your first house?
No, because
what was
before,
your first house?
Leviticus.
Oh, wow, you really did that.
Like I said, before I came into the elite crowd, you know, at the time it was me, Katrina, Selvin, and all that. And we were basically the peer people and the things that was, you know, still admiring people like yourself and other people that were after you. So, you know, we didn't get a chance to really get in there. So my first start in North Place, you got to start somewhere, was Leviticus because of Selvin, who was the first person as far as who took the role as my mother. So when I came out, Selvin and Katrina, and that was my family, and Eugene and Antoine and Derek, you know, these were my family. Ray Ray, we was all young. Some of us were in elite groups before I was, but we all pretty much came from the same pot.
Okay. So what was the first ball you ever walked?
The first ball I ever walked, I think, was the Bazaar Ball. When Alvernian vogue down on the table, and Terrell, when Curtis and everybody came out to walk for the Bazaar Ball at the Mark Ballroom, 95.
And you walked?
Yes.
And what was your category?
VOA.
Okay. And you walked it, was it a Butch Queen category? Or
yes. Absolutely. I didn't become into being a femme queen or into like, I started studying drag.
That's what I was trying to figure out. When did you start walking in drag?
No, I actually walked as a butch queen. I didn't start frequenting drags until maybe 97. By 98, I'm a femme queen now. You know, I had titties and I was getting my face pumped and stuff like that. So that's about 98, you know, 97 going into 98.
It's safe to say that from 1994 until 1996, you were still androgynous as far as being between a cross-dresser. Like, you were more fagged out, or would you say you were more butch queen?
I would say I was more B&G kind at then. So I was just a boy who was B&G kind. I had all the polos and the Tommies and the boots and the this and the that, you know, because back then we had the whole craft thing. So as a butch queen, I was able to do all of that, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you remember the first ball that you ever won?
The first ball I ever won was actually in the clubhouse. I was, it was 96 now. I was a Leviticus. And this is a story that, you know, I want to share with everybody because it comes about when we talk about the young children and stuff today. I was young. I didn't do cigarettes and weed and drugs all the way until I was about, like, 19. And it was funny because I picked up everything at the same time. And I was on the front on a train with a pioneer icon today. And my dear friend that passed away, you know, rest in peace, Antoine. And I was on the train. It was on the 109. We was coming down. It was December 25th, 1996. It was Mystery's Christmas Ball. And we were on this train, and my friend and the other person, you know, they was taking cocaine, you know, they was bumping. And I was sitting there, and they was like, well, bitch, you want to try? And I was like, no, but I have been watching everybody do, you know, in the lifestyle do it, but I just never had, you know, my aunts and all my friends would bump with my aunt and stuff like that, but I would never do that. So we on this train, and we coming down, and I take my first bump. And I remember going to the club, and me and myself in Vogue, and we both won Butch Queen Vogue Femme over the whole house of Revlon, December 25th, 1996, yes.
All right. Well, let's stop right there for now, and let's see if we have any callers online who may want to come in and, you know, say a few words to you and just wish you luck or whatever the case may be. Do we have any callers, Switchboard?
Let me see.
switchboard. Do we have any callers at this time?
I'm not sure.
Okay. I'm not sure if switchboard can hear us. So what we'll do is we'll continue to check in with switchboard, and if a caller comes through, feel free to let us know. All right? So December 25th, 1996 was the first time you had ever indulged in any drugs at all, or were you just smoking weed, you know?
No, I never indulged. When I picked up everything, it was pretty, like, I want to say in the same month or maybe even the same week or something. Yeah, it was all right behind each other. So I didn't ever do anything, no cigarettes, no bumps, no nothing, until that day came about. And I took that bump on that train, and I remember going home to my aunt and telling her that. So now I was able to get in part of, be a part of, quotations, the party.
Okay. So when did you join the House of Icon?
The House of Icon came about after the House of St. Clair. After I was in Leviticus, which was my first house, and it was the Selvas and the Katrinas and, you know, my dear friends from the first era, I came along and I met Ashley. And, you know, I met my only father to the same day, to this day, that's my father, James. And just a different, now a lot of more people, Curtis Ebony. I've met R.R., I met Tony, I met all these different people. And me and Ashley was best friends. And, of course, I ended up becoming a participant in the House of St. Clair. Maybe for
do
two
you,
weeks.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I don't want you to speed through. So now that you're in the House of Icon and you have a father that you...
No, I'm in the House of St. Clair.
I'm sorry, the House...
We interrupt your regularly scheduled programming for this breaking news report.
Breaking news report that if the pioneer and the legend is not sitting in front of Facebook, y'all will not know that y'all have a slew of callers that would like to speak to y'all. Y'all need to be sitting in front of Facebook so y'all can get these messages. I don't like
I
to be woken up out of my
if
sleep.
You came on. Oh, you were sleeping. Okay. I'm
yes.
Sorry.
Well, I just asked, and I told Jasmine earlier that my computer was
okay,
down.
But I'm in front of the computer now. I'm sorry. I thought, you know, somebody would come. They would, or would read the number. But I read them. It's no problem.
Okay. Y'all have a nice day, and I'm loving this interview.
Okay.
Bye.
I apologize for that, callers, but my computer is down at this time. So, Nicole, I would really appreciate it if you just took a few calls for me. Thank you.
Okay, give me a minute, guys.
While we're waiting on
the call, we have on the air is 267-259. You're live on the Sister to Sister for Real show.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, how are you? This is Maya Angelou.
Hi, Maya.
Hey, Maya, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm at the casino. Yes, the people brought my refund check, so I'm cutting up tonight.
Hey, Maya.
So how are you
doing? Are you listening to the show?
I'm actually just tuned in.
Okay, well, tonight we're interviewing Nicole, and she's giving us her life story. And if you have anything that you want to congratulate her on, now would be the time.
Well, how are you, Nicole?
I'm blessed. I'm here. What's up?
I'm great. I would just like to say thank you for, you know, just keeping the children in check.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yes.
All right, thank you so much. Can we get to the next caller so we can get all the callers in and then get back to your interview?
Yeah, 917-792, you're live on the Sister to Sister for Real show. 917-792, you're live on the Sister to Sister for Real show. I guess that caller's not there. Next caller. Divine Chanel, welcome to the air. Divine, you and the Sister to Sister for Real show.
What's going on?
West Coast mother.
I'm just a goddess, bitch.
going on? Congratulations. I'm listening to the show. Sounds great. How is everyone?
Hey,
how
are you doing, Mother?
Good, good. So what's the problem? I want to say congratulations. I want to definitely congratulate you on opening doors for girls like us, Nicole, because, you know, it's hard for the quote-unquote Banshee cunt or the ghetto girls. Or, I mean, I really don't really feel like I'm a ghetto girl, but, I mean, I know that I can live and exist in the ghetto, but I don't necessarily
right.
feel like I'm a ghetto girl. But, you know, that stigma that we have to live through, it's so hard for us to break through and be taken seriously. And it's, you know, and doing our thing, it's like you've opened doors for girls just like us and for me as well, you know what I mean? So, I mean, just look, there's another girl out here doing their thing as well as you. So I'm, like, definitely glad that you were one of the predecessors and made it cool and open for us to come through and do what we do.
Oh, wow. Kudos to you, bitch. Thank you so much. That was really touching. Thank you, Devon.
Oh.
Wow, thank you very much. I appreciate that. I appreciate
oh, no
that.
We appreciate you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. That really meant something for me. Thank you.
So if you want to come back to Vine later on in the show, don't forget to just press 1.
Oh, no problem. I'm listening.
Okay. And our next
Do we
caller,
have any
Nicole.
More callers? Okay, that's it for now.
Okay, so callers, tonight we're interviewing Nicole Kahn, and she's giving us her life story and her opinions on the ballroom scene today from yesterday. So if you are tuning in for the first time, or if you know Nicole and you want to call in, you can feel free to do so by pressing 1. And we also encourage that people who have never tuned into the show before, that if you're listening for the first time, please feel free to voice your opinion and anything that you may want to say. All right? So, Nicole, now, back in 1996 was the first time you ever started to indulge in, drugs of any sort. So is it something that you find that most people who have never done it before, they find themselves in the ballroom scene, getting introduced to that type of element of lifestyle?
Yes, absolutely. I think it's the protocol. I speak a lot about that and people and the young children that come into the scene. It's pretty much with the protocol. The way that happened for me happens for every individual practically that comes in the scene and that is young. And when it happened and I vote fem, you must and I won, or you must only imagine how I felt. So, of course,
I can relate.
Yeah, me being young and that happening, and it was like, oh, yes. And now I was able to hang with the girls, you know, because, I was voguing and I was going to clubs, and, you know, now I started bumping. But for me, I have never, I would say I was a user. I was never an addictor. I always control what I did. So when I started doing that, that wasn't like something that went on every day after that. It was something, no. That I think my consistency probably came years down the line, but no,
okay.
That wasn't.
So
no.
Now that you're, let's find out, how did you make it to the house of Icon?
Okay, well, I was in the house of St. Clair, and Sean and Ashley were on the same page as far as Sean having a different opinion about certain people that Ashley brought in, or, you know, who Ashley brought to the house, like every other house or any house does. And at the time, Ashley was the it thing. So we decided one day over the phone that she was going to leave. So the house of St. Clair had a ball in 1999, and Ashley came out as the mother. And after the ball was over, it was over. And her and I was on the phone and a few other of our little close friends. And, you know, she called me up and said, well, okay, well, what about this name, Icon? And, of course, we thought about all the Janet Jackson things and how the icons would feel. And we discussed it. And it was like, okay, cool. Well, we're just going to open up the house of Icon. So now we have to get a father. Of course, James is her favorite, and James is my favorite. And I said, oh, okay, well, I know, perfect. We didn't have to think about nobody. It wasn't an issue. It was like he was the ingredient that just made everything right. And James came along, and Sabrina, and it was just, it was a family. And from then, once James came in, he became the father, not the father, but the father, and everything just rolled into place after
that. Let me ask you now, what type of structure was formed in the House of Icon that made all the members feel like it was a family and that everybody were united in that house. And what did it do to your self-esteem? Because you did say that you had suffered from low self-esteem. So what did that house do to build your self-esteem to the point where you were able to stay there for so many years?
Well, I think starting off is that I had a lot to do with it happening. And it being continual, and James being the father and them being the mother, I still was the person that basically everybody was at Nicole's house. I kept everything together as far as us family, personal issues, things that we all dealt with in the house. We kind of spoke to each other every day. We were all friends before the House of Icon, and we all was family before the House of Icon. So it was pretty easy to for all of us to adapt to Shay Shays and Taifas, who was already Ashley children, and all the kids, Dante, and all the people that was already father children, including myself. Me and Ashley are sisters, so including myself as far as father. So it kind of like was like you making banana pudding, and you just had everything, the ingredients was perfect, and it was able to rise from that. So we all dealt with each other. It was small. It wasn't big at the time because when the house started, of course, all this big stuff started in the mid-2000s. There was a few houses like yourself, Mizrahi, maybe Revlon, that was really extreme as far as being all over the place. So the House of Icon was basic here in New York City. And all of us was family. You know, Kiana's, the people that we all really dealt with each other every day. We spoke to each other every day. And we didn't deal with each other like I guess with ego things and the ego part, we all pretty much knew our position and where we stand and who we went to for what we wanted and, you know, what we needed and stuff. So it was really a really close tight family. And it was a bunch of girls. So that made it fun, and it made the rain go on for a very long time.
Okay. So let me ask you, do we have any callers waiting right now?
Is there any callers? No, I didn't get anything. My computer's right in front of me now, so if they do have any callers.
Well, just let me know because
okay.
I don't want to be rambling, and then, you know, we have callers waiting. So let's move on to the next question, and I'm glad that we're on the topic of drugs because, you know, myself, I also got addicted to the drugs by being in the scene and stuff like that. But how did you manage to deal with the part of not becoming too addicted where I should say, did you become addicted to the point where you lost everything or you found yourself being homeless or anything of that nature?
I'm going to say that I was a person who had low self-esteem and had issues, but a person like a lot of us are who don't know our own strength. And at the time of me feeling down and low and, you know, self-esteem, I didn't know how powerful I was, see, because the same person who ended up molesting me became positive, and that was my first role of taking care of him. So I was always used to taking care of people, nurturing people, and being that role. So I never allowed myself to fall below the belt. There were times when your rent didn't be on time or you know, would spend money doing other things in the box because this is what you wanted to do and it was fun. But for me, I didn't have a real problem. And whenever I thought it was a problem, no one told me. I kind of got it together with myself because I was always helping this one and doing this one. And I had a responsibility when I first came in. You know, my uncle was modified retarded. He was HIV positive. I had to take care of him. So at the end, after all of that was said and done, I still had him. And then long after that, I got my baby now. So I was always in a position where I could not allow myself to do that. So I slipped, and I still today deal with trying to, you know, remain out of the box and thinking out of the box and doing what I'm worth. But I never had a real weak link for that. I knew when to stop. I knew that it was not appropriate to just keep going and going and going and going on because of the things I just saw around me. And I pretty much always wanted to be different, but I went along with the protocol of the lifestyle. So I think that saved me. Along with that, I had a praying grandmother. I come from a very spiritual background.
Okay, we'll get into that in a minute, into the spirituality part of your life. But have you ever been in love?
Yes. In love for me, I think I've had it twice. twice. I've had a lot of different relationships. I've loved in a lot of different relationships. But when I really decided to fall in love, it was with a butch queen. I don't ever recall myself going with Trade. Maybe my Butch Queen and Drag days. You know, I had a piece of Trade from 42nd Street, the story of Every Right Life. And, you know, I was dating for a little minute and stuff, but that was quickly gone. And I started dating Butch Queens. And the first Butch Queen that a lot of people might know is the one that I was in love with. And that went along. And then my White Horse came after that. So, yes, I was in love twice.
Okay. So are you in a relationship now?
No.
Okay. So do you think that the ballroom has changed dramatically from what it used to be, or is the ballroom on a scale from 1 to 10 pretty much balanced, or are there certain things that are still the same or some things that need to be changed?
I think the ballroom has changed dramatically. I think it's changed in a number of ways, though. It's not just about the categories. It's about the leadership. It's about the way houses are built and maintained. It's about even for the young children, what they do and their lack of respect, we were never allowed to do that when I was coming up. So I think it changed in the format of all those things in several different levels. Yes, the ballroom has completely changed.
Okay. Do you think the drugs are more rampant now than it was back in the 90s?
No. I think now for those of us like yourself that has come out of the box and has decided to go in a different direction, and for those of us that are still in the box struggling to become outside of the box and to be something different, we have a open eye to things. So what we couldn't see when we were a child, we were able to see clearly when we got older, and we were able to figure out people. We was able to just look around and see what drugs and everything was doing to everyone, which is why it was always minimized for myself, because I was able to start, I started to see clearly and what people were made of and what this lifestyle led to. So I think now it's just eye opener. Now everybody eye is on it. Now everybody pay attention. Back then things was classier and quiet. You didn't know, and it wasn't about kids and mothers and all that stuff doing, you know, drugs like that. And if it was, they were usually their gay children and people that were really, really, really close to them. So now I think it's just a big eye. Everybody eye is completely open to what drugs have done and is doing to the scene.
So what do you think in regards to the AIDS epidemic and the HIV and kids who are either HIV positive and know, but they're not doing the things that they need to do to keep themselves conditioned so that they can be here longer? And for those who may not know that they're HIV positive, but they feel like they don't have to get tested because they haven't done as much as their friends or what other people have done?
My opinion on the AIDS and the HIV epidemic and what people have done and do, I'm not gonna talk about what people have done. I'm gonna talk about my own experience. And I want to say to everybody that's listening, every young child, older child, new child, no one is exempt. And you can minimize what you do like I did, and you cannot be nasty like I wasn't. And you can still, it can still happen to you, like me. Young coming out, I've always had a real bad mouth. This is my first, to me, along with the tragic thing was the fire, my first life lesson, okay? And I'm going to share this. I've been thinking about it a long time, and I wanted to share it. And I teach my children to this day. We all talk, talk, talk. And everybody's reading everybody, and everybody's talking about everybody. Well, I was that person. And I came out, and I was smart, and I was wise. So when I got into the in crowd, I knew all the tea. And I knew this person business, and I knew this person business. And it actually shaped and formed my life, little do I know, after. But I knew all these different things. And, you know, I wasn't nasty, so I said on this thing, well, okay, I can be ugly, this, this, and that, but you're nasty, horrible, this, and you're dying, and you're sick, and that's just that. And along down the line, I realized how many people's feelings I hurt and everything. But for those people, you know, karma is a bitch. So I went around and you said this one, and even being in love, accusing your lover, talking about myself, about, you know, his nasty ways, and just always pointing the finger. And everybody found out, all the people that I said that it was this, and everybody found out at the time that they were okay, and the Lord stuck me with something I had to live my whole life with. And that lesson taught me to keep your fucking mouth closed. You are not in a position to read and to talk about other people's issues and stuff, because it can happen to you and you're not even like them. So now I'm gagging. I'm gagging because, wait, bitch, I spooked everything, so I thought. So we move so fast and we speak so fast. No one is exempt. This is HIV and AIDS is a part also of the protocol to this lifestyle. And if you made it and you dodged the bullet, that's like shooting an arrow that goes real high. Hooray for you. And you pray to your father that you continue to dodge the bullet, because this lifestyle just is something. And I think people who goes around it, no, it's just a part of this lifestyle. It did not happen in 2000. It's been here. And we've been having to deal with it. I was one of the people that read my mouth, and one of the people that had to deal with things before other people didn't even have to deal with after I read my mouth about them. So,
well, I give you kudos, not to cut you off, but I give you kudos for opening up to your listeners and letting everyone know that, you know, as Octavia used to say, life is a boomerang, and what you throw comes back at you. And it's good to know that you can accept where you are today and continue to move forward with teaching people that they don't have to make the mistake that you made. They can do something different, and that's where the change comes in at. Do we have any callers at this time?
I guess not. I'm looking at the computer.
Are you looking at the computer?
Yes, I'm looking at it, Jeff. Nobody's hit me up.
Okay, if you're out there.
I got a lot of other hits up, but they're not from the person I'm watching, so.
Okay, if there are callers out there, could you please press 1 and let us hear your views on the life story of Nicole Kahn tonight. And if you have any opinions on anything that we're talking about as far as, you know, the HIV epidemic and the ballroom scene and the changes and things of that nature, even though we have a Wednesday night show, the state of emergency for addressing the ballroom issues. But let's move forward.
Hold on, because I guess Nicole can't see my messages. And
Jasmine said it would be her, so now she's going, it's you. I didn't know.
Oh, she had to take an important call
for
work.
Oh, she didn't
say that. 252-210, you're live on the air. 252-210, you're live on the air. Okay, I guess not. 205-983, you're live on the air. Divine, you're live on the air.
Oh my God, Nicole, I have to say, you just struck me again, and I didn't think that was possible.
Yes, bitch. I did not think
that was possible. You struck a nerve on me again. You know, with the HIV, with the HIV prevention, I'm HIV negative, and I always catch myself for years reading, slamming, saying something, you know, oh, you're sick, oh, bitch, your bitches are dying. And, you know, to realize the impact that I have on people, I mean, I've been thinking a lot about it lately, and I really have been trying my best to dial back because, you know, being gay and being, you know, you feel like that's your first defense, honey, like, yes, bitch, I'm clean. I'm not like you dirty, nasty bitches. You're dying. You're sick. You're all that. You know what I mean? And that's the first thing that I find myself wanting to say, because that's one thing, being gay and being out here at 34 and living this long clean and not having those that problem, you feel like that's a trophy. So that's the first thing you want to floss, or you want to smear somebody's face. But just like you said, it can happen to anybody, and it could just rain down on me any day. All it takes is just one slip up. And it doesn't even have to be a slip up. I can get in a car accident or decide I'm going to use this, you know, anything. You know what I mean? It doesn't even have to be sexually transmitted, but it's just, you just struck me with that. Like, you know, I'm blown away that you had the courage to get on here live and say that, because even if I had, I don't think that I would disclose that to people. I would not, you know, I just would not, because of how much I have said and how bad I have treated people and things I've said to people that I knew were that have made me angry. I would never disclose that. I would never, because I would feel like, oh, my God, now they're going to wear me out.
Well, you know, I mean, and that's very true. But after so much time and everything, you know, I did say I was the first one. So, you know, I know with being able to come out and be myself that no one has the right to point the finger. And like you said, there's more than we can only imagine, but no one actually has the courage just to tell their story. I'm not telling my business. I'm telling my story. It's something that's very important.
Sorry. I'm
not going to lie, and that's not the way you can help somebody. You just have to really tell my story. And that was my first life lesson. I was very young. And it slapped me in my face. And I think after that, yes, everybody that got sick and everybody that needed apartments and everybody that needed assistance, I was the one. And everyone knew you can come to me. And I did it inside the scene and outside the scene. And the gay men health crisis housing work, I was that. I didn't know nothing about that. When there was no stuff like that, there was me. That's what I was doing because that was my first.
Are you
life.
Taking over my interview, sweetie? So, Divine, we're going to put you back in the queue.
That has touched me, and, I mean, as an adult, you know, and as in this point in my life, I'm going to really make a vow that I don't ever want to say nothing like that again. You know what I mean? Because, I mean, it's very hurtful.
And I think people should follow in your footsteps behind that, because I think that we already get bashed enough with, you know, our lifestyle, and we need to stop bashing each other about illnesses that could affect any and every one of us at any given time. You understand?
Can I say something real quickly, and to the switchboard, anybody that's listening and anybody that's confused? You're confused because you didn't decide to listen because you felt whatever you felt in your head. I'm doing this one time and one time only. Anything that you need to feel and you want to find out, you go to the iCards. So this iCards will be downloaded. I said this is not a bullshit interview. I'm not coming here to stroke you guys' ego or to stroke my own. I'm coming here to tell the truth about what's going on and that we all are dealing with today. So I'm not going to do that. If you was paying attention and you was interested in myself like Divine or the people that was there, then you heard what I said. And if you didn't, like every other thing, you can iCard it with all due respect. I'm just not going to do this. My Whitney Houston line, I'm not doing this no more. Because this took a lot of praying for me to come and to set myself out there to be able to help somebody else. I'm not doing this no more.
Kelly, do we have any more callers?
Kelly? The next caller that's on the line is 248-678. Okay. 248-678, you're live on the air. Okay, you're gone. The legendary icon, Kool-Aid Khan, is on the line.
Hello?
Hey, Sylvan.
Hello, how are you? Hey, daughter.
Hi, brother.
And you already know why I'm kinky.
Yes. What? Only God. We'll set
truth
all of
detailed.
And so go ahead, Mama.
Oh, no, what you was going to say?
No, I was about to throw up, but go ahead. No, I want you to say what you was going to say.
Oh, no, only I could just tell you is, you know, you're my daughter. You know, I take my clothes off for you to this day. And, you know, you're now tattooed on me, and it's perfectly big and clear, and I can't wait for you to see your Nicole. But I'm going to try not to get emotional with this one, but it's just that you're like my first batch of my kids, and it's like, I don't know, it's like so many, and it's like just for you to, you know, just to do this on the show, just to do it, period, you know, just to let everybody know that, you know, we're all human. It's not even about legends or icons or, you know, you can't really put a name on this. And, I, you know, I'm just here to just tell you, I don't even have to tell you what you already know. You know what I'm saying? I guess the only thing that I could just tell you is I'm just so proud of you. You know what I'm saying? It's like you are the reason. I mean, I'm just like gagging right now.
It's okay. It's okay, Divine. It's okay.
Honestly, no. It's okay. I'm going to be real with you because, you know, we talked, we cried, we've done it all. For me, you know, for my story. But honestly, this is, by you giving what you gave, this is the reason why my mouth is why it is, because of the underdogs. You understand what I'm saying? And it's like when people say things about you and then they say, oh, well, you remind me of Selva, and then Selva, you remind me of Nicole, a lot of people really do not know us. You know what I'm saying? And it's so sad that we want to reach out and we want to put people, you know, bring people around us, but we know what it gives, because I can't wait for my interview. But I just wanted to tell you, I just love you.
Oh,
and I'm just so proud of you.
I love you too.
And if I was to leave this earth, I know that my legacy lives on in your mouth. So I'm just proud of you, and just keep up all of the work, because a lot of people really just does not know what you really do on the underground. Like, actually, people would gag if they really see or saw what you've been doing. But I'm just like, my words are just like, so, you know. But I love you. You know, hit me up. You know, I'm waiting for this thing to be over, so you can hit me up. So, you know.
Thank you very much. And thank you very much, Divine, for all those kind words. Thank you very, very much. I appreciate it. And I just want to say to everybody and all that, and ain't no victim here, baby. I paid my dues and not my debts. I did what I did. And when you go through life, you learn things, and you go through things, and they teach you better so that you don't go through the next thing again, and that somebody you care about don't have to go through this. So I ain't looking for no motherfucking pity party, and I can quite care less about what people. This is about me. And when I go down to lay down to sleep tonight, I know everything that I said out my mouth previous to my interview to after my interview is real, because I'm not afraid to say who I am.
All right. So, Kelly, are there any more callers?
267-324. You're live on the air.
Hello, Nicole. Hey, RR. Hi, Kelly. I wanted to say thank you for having the show and being brave, Nicole, to really put yourself out there. I've been listening since the beginning of when the show first came on tonight. And I just wanted to get your take on some of the things we've kind of touched upon when you first came into the ballroom. A lot of people say that the ballroom was for a place for the people who were could not have and the have-nots that could not be. And it was a place for us to come together and live the fantasy. And it was back in the day, I've heard people say that it was a lot of the violence was there, but it was more racially motivated. Compared till now, I want to know what, you know, there's a huge problem going on with the ballroom, with the violence, and I want to see what your thoughts are from how it was back then and how it is now, and the different type of violence, because it's still there, and what do you think about how it's changed, you know, because it's come full circle, but in a different way.
I think I'm going to be short and simple about it. What happens now that didn't happen then, people didn't know their place. When there were issues and stuff that went on about it, and they were two individuals, or if there were even a group of individuals, that's where it was. Now today, you have a lot of opinions, you have a lot of sideliners, you have a lot of cheerleaders, purple palm hands, you have more instigators. Back then, the ballroom scene was ran by older people, and older people like Cabbage and RR and James and them, you know, you can feel fab with standing next to them, but don't think that you wouldn't have been put in your place. And you didn't disrespect that. You know, I didn't understand RR look for many years. I didn't throw shade at RR. After I got old enough, I came to him and I said, you know, and I said the same thing for Tony, and I remember meeting James. And it's just, I think now people just don't know their place. And the places that should be taking place are not taking their place, like the pioneers and the icons and all the people up there. So I think everything is just in a rigmarole. Everybody wants to be the it factor. Everybody wants to be Chiefs, and nobody wants to be Indians. And back then, that's not the way it went. And you didn't have a choice back then as well.
Okay. And my second question to you is, how do you feel about how they say back in the day, we still have the same problems as far as, you know, the people who were involved in, you know, sex work, who, because of the things that they've done, because of who they wanted to be in, you know, maybe the femme queens, a lot of them feel that they may not have had a choice to get an honest 9-to-5 job because they are in transition or transitioning, and they can't go get a job, you know, looking like Denise when their, you know, driver's license is Dennis, and they have to resort to sex work. And for, you know, engaging in some of that, some of the people may have, you know, gone from a negative to a positive status. I want to know, what are your thoughts on how the ballroom and sex work, it's very, have you said earlier, it's kind of like a protocol with a lot of the people in the ballroom scene. And I want to know, you know, how do you feel about that? And have you ever, if you feel comfortable in revealing this, have you ever engaged in that and felt that, you know, because of the ballroom and the situations that you were in kind of forced you to engage in that kind of work? And how do you feel about just that in general, and how there's so many people in the ballroom who feel that they need to resort to that?
Okay. Wow, that was really interesting.
And it's not coming from a judgmental place at all.
No, not at all. And to answer to your question, yes. And because it's the protocol of this lifestyle, sometimes we get so consumed with just the, you know, like you said earlier, has-nots, wannabes and stuff. So we come to this place where we are allowed this fame, and we come to this place where we are allowed to be ourselves, and we have love, and we get all these different, well, what we think is love and what we think is friendship, and we get mixed up in the box. And the box is only four corners, and in this box, every corner there's a different situation, and it's just all happened. The lifestyle itself is built on promiscuous. Everybody that came out, and I'm sure everybody can own up to it, if anybody's feeling like being real, we were all thinking about dicks in our head before we knew it. So the lifestyle itself is based upon promiscuity. I think promiscuity has just been taken way out of the whole boxing itself, where there's no such thing for a lot of people as love. When you come into this lifestyle, there's a protocol. I used to tell my friends, and I'm sorry to break the news to everybody, but it's like this. You come out as what you may think as a nobody. If you have low self-esteem and you don't have any backbone, you tend to follow the crowd. When you follow the crowd, you demeaning, you're going to follow the protocol of the box. So you come out, you meet a couple of girlfriends, and they may be girlfriends on your level. And then once you start voguing or doing something different, as in doing craft or doing drugs, you're allowed to get into a different part of the group. Now, once you start doing all these different things and you want to go to balls and now you're doing this, you need to get this money. But unfortunately, you don't have no time to work because you got to be at this ball, you with this girlfriend, you doing this. So you just basically, your life now is consisted upon the box. And everybody that comes out, is caller, follows that same protocol. Anybody that does anything different is because they wanted to do something different in themselves. They chose to take a different route. They chose to move different. So prostitution, drugs, balls, HIV, death, sickness, this is all a part of this lifestyle, the shade, people reading each other behind this one back. It's all a part of this lifestyle. I always say that it's not what you do, it's how you do it, and it's not what you say, it's how you say it. And if we learn to take some control over our own situation, this lifestyle will have nothing to do with who we are. I believe, period, this lifestyle may have taught me and the things that I learned from the lifestyle, but it having anything to do with what God made me to be, it has nothing to do with it. But I first had to see this self. I had to tell myself the truth. So, yes, I did all the protocol things. I did everything. And then one day I sat back and I said, wait, the 16-year-old boy just told me, the 12-year-old child just said that he's positive. Wait a minute. And then things just started just opening my eyes. And then now we're at a time when they're 20 years old where I was young, and can relate, if we knew anything, it was about coke. Now they're doing coke and K. So it just becomes, after time goes on and the generation goes on, things just become a bit extreme. Has it always been the foundation? Absolutely. People don't claim it. People choose not to tell the truth. I'm not here to tell what somebody else should do about their story. I'm only here to do what God's going to do with me. So I had to learn according to, you know, whatever I learned from, and everybody else has to learn from it, and it's just, it's up to us to decide. I'm not going to prostitute, because what you tell yourself in your mind, you are. So you tell yourself in your mind you can't get a 9-to-5 because you can't, you look like a femme queen. All the stuff I told myself, I'm in drag, they're not going to accept me. And I personally have done it, and I will own up to it. The word prostitution is not in Nicole's vocabulary. Hustler would be more like it. I do not enjoy sleeping with anybody for sex. I think it's pretty disgusting, but we do what we have to do to make our current situation get by. And that's just what we do. And then when you live in that type of mind frame for such a long time, it's so hard to get out. And that's why it comes times when we have to take a pause, because we just live in a mind frame. It's ridiculous, and we read each other, but we all are dealing with issues about trying to be out the box and trying to be something different and dealing with something that's inside of us that we can't quite clearly see because we got, you know, the drugs, the prostitution,
right,
the balls.
Nicole, let's take some other callers.
Okay, my next caller is, thank you, caller, for
thank
your
you,
question.
Caller.
I did want to answer his question. Thank you very much. That's all the things of the protocol and the inside of this box. That's it. My next caller is 803-463. You're live on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Hey, Auntie, how are you?
Hey, Nicole, how you doing?
I'm good. What's going on?
Yeah, how y'all doing? I just wanted to say that I enjoyed your story, and that I want you to know that I love you, and I am proud of you, and you came a long way. You know, I know you from a little one, and I appreciate the positive stuff that you do, that I know, too, and behind the scenes and stuff like that, and I'm just proud of you.
Thank you very much, and, you know, I love you, and every time that I get conflicted with some type of decision or I'm battling with my thoughts, you are always there, and you have been a very positive role figure in my mouth, in my life, along with a lot of other people's, like, RR, and Selvin is not, Joseph is my, Joseph Princess, I mean, that right there took me into a whole new different sector of my life. So the life story is pretty long as far as me and my experiences and the people that have came along that tried and that still to this day is in my ass about thinking and moving outside of the box. So thank you, Auntie. I really appreciate that. And you encouraged me to do this. So I thank you very much.
You're welcome. And God bless you and bless everyone. So I just want to say that real fast before I go to bed. But good
thank
night,
you, Auntie.
And I loved you and I enjoyed you, okay? And
I love
you
too.
You know what time it is.
Okay.
No.
My next caller is 773-580. You live on the air. 773-580. You live on the air. Okay, that caller is gone. Do we have any more?
We don't have any more at this time.
No, you may proceed.
Okay. So let's talk about being a parent and your day-to-day life as far as being a parent and, you know, running your household and still trying to be a part of the ballroom community. Do you find that to be something that's a bit of a struggle and sometimes it can become a bit draining?
Yeah, absolutely. I find it to be a bit draining, all because of the stuff that I know about myself. So that's why I find it to be draining, because when you don't have nothing going on, and let me say this before I go into this, because a lot of what I am today and a lot of what I speak about, I must give a lot of this credit to my mother as well, Joseph Princess. And me having a baby and me dealing with my situation and me just so many of the things that Joseph have came along and saved my life, I do had some real role models that kept me focused, that I did not go into that. Because like I said, I had my uncle before I had my baby. So I had the same apartment. I pretty much, if I could have had foster kids, I would have did that. I'm just the nurturing person. It's just what I do. So, you know, I know how to juggle things, but it gets overwhelming for me. I begin to forget about myself. I begin to neglect my own responsibilities. And I'm going to say this person, one, Joseph, because I don't think there's a person in the scene that does this to me. It's Joseph who will go off, and she doesn't want to hear about Mother Khan, and she does not want to hear about the icons, and she does not want to hear about nothing. But what am I doing and all the smarts that I got and me putting it to use? So I pretty much, it was easy juggling things. I'm very multitask. I'm a parent to my daughter who does very well when she looks very beautiful. She has everything in the world and the love and attention. And I'm a parent to my gay children. And then I'm a parent to all the other children from other people's houses who have grown attached to me. It become overwhelming, like I just did when I left the show after listening to my mother, Joseph. I had to stop because too much talking, she would say. Too much talking. You do this. You know this. You know this. What are you doing? We do so much talking, and we don't do nothing. And I personally feel guilty in myself, and I convict myself. So when someone comes and read me, that's why I'm so aggressive. You can't hurt my feelings. I don't bap. You can't say nothing to me, because everything you're saying about me that is wrong or right, I have dealt with it myself. So, you know, it becomes overwhelming, but now I've learned to say no. You know, some things have to just stop. And if people are upset and they feel they're mad at me and this, this, and that, they will get over it. If they're your friends and they love you, they're going to be there with you. You know, and I'm very honest with all my friends, like yourself, RR. So it's not like I'm telling people half of the story.
Okay. So let me ask you, at what stage in your life did you start to find your spiritual connection with the power that's greater than yourself?
Well, it was always there. I had a praying grandmother who thought that church would bring out the fact that I was gay or the things that she saw, because my grandmother saw it quicker than everybody. I went to church a lot. But I think that God has always just instilled something into me where I always paid attention to things like wisdom, knowledge, and lessons. And I got a thrill out of hearing people testimony. And so when things happened to me, I wasn't the victim. You know, I'll be the victim. I'll be the victim all your life. Everybody wants to be the victim. So, yeah, that's how that pretty much worked for me.
Okay. Now, I just wanted to give you a chance to catch your breath and get back into Nicole mode before I ask you this next question. And I think you and I had sat down once and we had this conversation. And I want you, since you're being very candid and open this evening, I want you to tell me and your listeners, what do you do when you know that you're on a specific type of medication to take care of your health, and you also know that you're doing negative things to your body that's going to hinder the medication that you're putting in your body? Is that a struggle for you, or is it something that you've worked on and you've learned how to give up one for the other?
I'm working on. Life is a work in progress. There have been, not a lot, but there have been a couple of times that I have felt short because I lived according to the lifestyle, or I lived according to the box, or just according to what I wanted to do and what I thought was interesting.
Right.
And I knew then that, like I said, I had a mother, and you know, with Giselle was my boardroom and peer mother, I had my mother for Realistic Life, and me becoming a woman, was Joseph. So I'm kind of blessed in a sense to have had people who would shut me up, because if you notice, I will go and go and go, and I can talk and talk. And so I was taught things that I was supposed to do. So before I had to take anything, I was if I was doing, like I said, I wasn't an addictor, so I didn't do drugs a lot, but I was always a person who was filled with guilt. I would feel guilt. So even if I did a little party and everything, I would stop. And it would be, okay, I don't want to speak to anybody right now. I'm going to eat. I'm going to pop these vitamins. I'm going to drink this water. I'm going to take this orange juice. I'm going to give myself some exercise. You know,
so
this is what I do.
So you're limitation of what you need to do when you need to do it.
Right.
Okay, so let's move forward. And Let's talk about becoming a femme queen, and what was your process to developing, like, your breasts, your body parts, and have you had any surgery done or anything of that nature?
Well, for a very long time, I just moaned, and my father, Jay Zycon, used to always.
Now, what's the purpose of moaning?
The purpose of moaning is, for me, is to give yourself the things that you need before you introduce yourself to surgery. Moaning, our estrogen and our male hormones are leveled out. You moan, if you are an actual man, you may have more male hormones than you have female hormones. You take the female hormones to override your masculine hormones. So where you would grow up and you're going through puberty and you get muscles and you grow hair, if you're moaning at a very young age and if you're moaning correctly, you can skip that process of that happening to you because your body never developed or, you know, the masculine hormones that it needed to develop in a strong manner.
Does hormones take over testosterone?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. And it can do it in a worse way. So we all need to be careful about how much hormones we put in our body, because sometimes we want to take over the testosterone so bad that we are moaned so fiercely and we can destroy our liver. So moaning is to just bring, you know, it brings glow, stretch, it makes your body soft, and, you know, it makes your eyes chinky. It just makes all the features that just are naturally on you.
It brings out the feminine qualities.
Yes, just the natural features first, the natural features, and it just makes you cunt, just like that. But there are things that still need to be done as you go along and developing and being a woman. For me, at that time, was silicone. I don't regret it. I do wish I could have handled it differently. I think it was like the protocol. I wanted to have body. So I went and I did everything everybody else did. I went to the person on the table and she pumped me with silicone, I hope. And the same thing as for my breasts. Fortunately, I have never had any problems other than me being fast and pushing my titties and not wearing bras after a certain amount of time, because the way they would drop, I just thought it was over for me. And not knowing that whatever you did to become that woman, you have to still continue to do, and I didn't. So they gave a dysfunction to my breast, so that's like a little uncomfortable because silicone moves in your body. So we have to be careful.
Right.
Yeah, it shifts, and it moves. So we have to be careful on how we get the silicone and then what we do.
So what would your suggestion, not to cut you off, but I have to interject because you're very long-winded. What would your suggestion be to the newer girls who are coming out and knowing that there's a process to development, if you could tell me, maybe name three girls, not for any particular reason other than the fact that they took their time and that they developed in a way that you think a femme queen should develop, past or present?
That would be a lot. That would be a lot of girls. I don't want to point anybody out.
Okay.
Individually, but what was the question you said after that? Before that, because that just took me, like, I just tried to think of a lot of different girls, because I
said,
see,
what would you tell the young girls of today as far as taking hormones?
Yes.
Yeah, as far as taking hormones,
do it. That's what I'm going to say, what you said about balls. You don't have to do it no more like that. We did it like that because it was the protocol. Now we have bags, and we have hip implants, and we have butt implants, and we have silicone implants, where you don't have to put this industrial stuff in your body. It's not in a bag. It's not nothing. It's just put
on
your
muscle. But what about the hormone shots itself to soften you up, though?
Right, but the hormone shots, if you can be on hormone all your life, if you put enough silicone in your body that goes exceeds the stretching that the hormones has given your skin, it still will be hard. You have to be able to be moaned out and have enough skin. That's what makes the body hard. There's not enough moon for it to move, so it starts to become compressed. Because your skin is not being stressed, and that's what the purpose is of taking a hormone. So when when you take hormones, you get breasts. When you pump that breast,
well, are you saying I don't take hormones?
well, you have to tell. You know what I mean.
I'm one
when
of the birth queens who don't do that.
Well, if you have an A cup breast on hormones, you can necessarily correct. I would suggest that you get pumped to maybe a 36B, but you can stretch all the way into a C because you have stretched it naturally just with an A cup. So your skin can be allowed to stretch into a B or a C.
So now, moving forward, let me ask you this. As far as your enhancement and the way you look now at the age that you are, do you find yourself being at a point in your life now where you're comfortable with your look, and all you want to do is enhance where you are and take your time doing it?
Yeah, I think I'm just my more like right now in my life, I'm just being a work in progress, and I'm trying to do all the things that I teach. I'm really comfortable, not trying to be sarcastic. There's things that can be changed, but I am very comfortable in my skin. I'm comfortable with my body. I'm comfortable with just who I am. So, yes, I'm very comfortable, yes.
Well, I just want to say that, you know, I give you kudos for being so outspoken and just telling your story and just putting it out there and keeping it 100 with everybody and still letting them know that even though you can be vulnerable and open up, that they don't need to get it twisted. You're still Jenny from the block and that you will still go off if you need to. But at the end of the day, Nicole, you will always be Nicole.
Yes,
and that's all that really matters. I want to thank you for the interview that you gave. And if there are any callers out there that want to ask any questions, you know, in regards to the interview and Nicole's being so open tonight, feel free to call in and press 1. Nicole, if there's anything you want to add that I didn't get a chance to ask you, feel free to do so. And if we have any more callers at this time, let's try to get to the callers, and then we can get to our next topic for the evening.
Okay, there's no more callers. There's no more callers. I think there's a lot of stuff that weren't asked.
Well, hold on. I have a question.
Okay.
Because you forgot to talk about Nicole Lesbian Days. We didn't even talk about that.
I didn't know anything about that. No one gave me that sex scene.
Yes,
so
Nicole used to be a lesbian.
Oh,
let's talk about her lesbian days.
God, that was not nice.
So, Nicole, why did you withhold that?
I mean, I put you to ask any question that you would like. There's a lot of questions that haven't been answered, but for the most part, who I am have been answered, and everything that hasn't been answered is what I'm doing to this
not
day.
Not answered,
so,
but asked. So now I'm going to ask you questions that I didn't want to ask you because you withheld. So now I'm going to ask you, all of your sexual partners that you've had, have you ever had sex with someone of the opposite sex but of a masculine gender, which means have you ever dated dykes?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I've had my back then in the 90s, I was one of the girls that trendsetted that as well. I had my first encounter, RR, with Mikey. If you remember Puerto Rican Mikey, he used to be in Infinity.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That was my lover for like maybe about a year and a half. And just like my experience with A Piece of Trade, it was real short-lived and then came about the Butch Queens. Later on down the line, so Kelly won't stop, after the Butch Queens, and after me being gagging and hurt, you know, I actually went back into that frame, and that's when my mother moved me to Maryland, and I was going with the Dykes from the House of Revlon for maybe about a year and a half. And
okay, you're going to have to let me open up a new can of worms here, because this is a question that has been dying for me. I've been dying to ask this question because it's been coming up too much. Why does a film queen want to go out with a butch? And what is it that y'all do sexually? I'm at awe with this. That's just as bad as a femme queen becoming a transgender and wants to strap it on and have sex with a female.
I think I answered that question a long time ago about people going with different sexes and doing that. I think that's all a part of the mind. And what was fun about being with a dyke, and I will say it, because they are a woman and they look like a man and they act like a man, they know how to treat you like a woman. You wouldn't have to tell the dyke or the butch or the lesbian, whoever it is that you're going with, what you need. They know it. You wouldn't have to tell, I mean, and I do mean this physically, emotionally, and financially. They are just like, and they look like a guy, and they move like a guy, but their insides and what they know about a woman, because they are, they're able to express to you. So they try to keep it away from themselves, but they live vicariously through you, because you're a man who wants to be a female. So that works pretty good together, and the love is so... together, you know, it's togetherness. It's different from being, you know, it's, to me, it's different from being with a trade.
I can't even see Kelly's face, but I can see she's smiling and saying, yes, bitch, yes.
It is different like that. I do compare the dyke and the femme queen thing a little bit to the butch queen and femme queen thing, but I would give more of it to the dykes, that as far as lasting long, staying there, being loyal and stuff, because in all reality, they are a woman.
Y'all have a caller. You have the legendary Hassan Ebony is on the line.
Hey, what's going on, everybody?
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, Hassan.
What's going on, Nicole? I had to sit back and listen for a while because I ain't want to interrupt your interview. But I can say I am truly blessed that I met you once upon a time in my life and stuff. So, you know, I knew you from before, Nicole, and you know what I'm saying, I know you now, and you have grown from when I met you. Even I can say, even when you were still young, you used to say little things to me and stuff that, you know, I wouldn't think that people noticed, but you know, everything was helpful. And you and the whole little crew that you grew up around, and that we all grew up around the same kind of crew and stuff. I'm definitely blessed and grateful, and wish the new generation had it like that, but they don't. They don't. But you know. But other than that, yeah, I'm definitely listening to your show, and God has really blessed you. So don't you even forget about that.
Amen.
So, and I hope a lot of people is really sitting back listening to your message, because not too many people will sit back and tell a story, and I give you kudos for that. You know.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And we have known each other for a very, very, very long time. So you have been through the whole transformation and alphabation and all that other stuff. Yes, thank you.
Any more callers?
The next caller is 404-447. You're live on the air.
Hey, what's going on? This is Kelly.
No, this is Nicole. How are you? Caller.
Next caller. Does that mean no, caller?
So anyway.
Okay. So, like I said, there probably was a lot of, you know, things, whatever, you know, as far as today and what I do. I'm not actually looking to
Do you have any more secrets that you need to tell us?
Secrets.
Hmm.
Just the only secret I have to say is that I'm just like you. You callers that's listening, you on that other end of the phone that's, you know, nervous, and you have your midnight secrets and your promiscuous thoughts and your ambitions and your ups and downs and your put down. I am just like you. But just remember, it's not where you start, it's where you end up at, as my mother Joseph would say to me. So, and with that being said, it's just live your life, try to control and be your own destiny. Your destiny is not tied to anybody. And I speak like this. I want to address something about me. And for those people who think that I may speak like I'm above, I'm just a very spiritual person. Yes, I do nothing but watch T.D. Jakes. So once you do stuff like that, you fool your body up with that type of knowledge and you will speak out your mouth like that. I'm never trying to be anybody that I'm not. I never owned up to be somebody else. I am not the Joneses as far as I'm concerned. There is no more Joneses. I am not trying to keep up with the Joneses. I'm just trying to help a lifestyle and a bunch of children and a bunch of people not have to go through what all of us have went through or just myself have been going through. So today I'm still fighting, and I still want to be this, and I want to be a social worker, and I want to be a psychologist, and I have all these different thoughts and everything that I want to do, and then I have the gift that God has given me into speaking and being honest and helping people, and sometimes that tie up with one another, and I don't know how to deal with it, and I have to stop and stand still and figure it out before I move into my own direction. So which will bring me on to the topic RR was talking about thinking out of the box and trying to base your thoughts and what you want in your private life out of the box of this lifestyle, not just this ballroom, but this lifestyle. So you on the phone lines and you callers that are listening and have heard my interview, why don't you guys come and help me promote how and what can we do to put the picture in people's minds about how good it can be to lead your own destiny and how good it can be to have enough strength to be different and not to be like everybody else. And we do what everybody else may do, but it doesn't mean that you can control what you do. We all do the same thing, but I may control it. See, your trash is on the concourse. My trash is in the bag. I'm trash, but it's just in the bag. So I want to bring that conversation in, which is why I started off with the interview. And thank you, RR. That was really, really, really good. I appreciated that. We could have went on a long while because there's a lot more that I would have loved to talk about. But I'm going to do what I'm here.
At the end of the day, Nicole, you know, your story is your story, and this is your show. And if there were any questions that that I failed to ask you, I want you to feel free to say to your listeners, you know, there's a lot of things that I hadn't said, but you know what? This is something I want to share with you because it brings back memories. And at the end of the day, I don't want to be one of those people to come in and ask you more than, you know, I think.
Okay, well, what I would do is to anybody that's on the phone line that you feel and you want to be a part of this interview, because I'm not scared of the devil.
But I have a question for you.
Okay, 1 minute, let me say this. If you have a question, if you want to know something, if you know me in a part or a sector in your lifestyle, when you want to come up here and you share, you have a question, feel free to press 1. I am not afraid to be the truth. Just don't be rude and obnoxious so we can go with the interview as long as we go on with the topic. So if you feel like you didn't get enough or you want to say something, you definitely can press 1 and come on the phone lines, and you can ask any question as you are. But I do think what you did was very, very well, great. And I'm going to stick on this.
Let me ask you this question real quick. How do you feel about people thinking that you're very boisterous and shady and obnoxious at times?
I mean, I hate that people think that, and I hate that people pass judgment on me like that. I kind of feel that it's more of a problem with themselves because they're too busy worried about what I am doing. That's not what I'm trying to do. I have a lot of people that says, I think the word was, I was a philosopher. Well, to let the whole world know, I speak like a philosopher. Well, to let everybody know candidly and truthfully, after I heard that word, I actually had a bunch of people explain it to me. So if I was speaking like that, and if I was speaking and talking like that, well, amen, because God just showed me I had a gift, because I never knew what a damn philosopher was. I went through it in school. I remember I went and picked up my old college book, and I was looking at Plato, and I said, oh, okay, I remember this when I was going to class and stuff. When I was in college, I was going to class, and I remember the whole thing, and it all came back to me. But I never intended to come and speak like that or to stick above everybody. So this is one of the reasons why I'm telling my story and being truthful, so people can know that I'm not above anybody, the law, the rules of this lifestyle, and the rules of our daily life. You know, we're not exempt. We all have to just follow the protocol, or the protocol that we set for ourselves. So I'm not, if you feel that way, I have a character. I'm fun. I think I've learned to take shade as far as reading in a fun way. Like, I can read what you all are and everything, and I would think that we cool. You know, I have to, because if you take it and you make it a real deep to yourself and stuff, it'll end up bothering you more than it bought the person that read you. So now you're dealing with these things. No,
me?
Period. Just no, just period. Just period.
I'm just saying period.
It would end up bothering you as the actual person that got read, than the person that read you. And you read them back, but now you're dealing with what they said because you allow it to become attached to you. Know who you are. Regardless of what people may make you out to be, there's a feeling in all of us. I don't care who you are, how ugly you look, how unfortunate it may be. There's a feeling in all of us that's different than somebody else's feeling, and we need to start to acknowledge it and growing upon it. We're not going to be better. We're not going to – everything is not going to just get better, because the more what wisdom and knowledge you have, I believe the more problems you get, and the more guilt you begin to have to live with. The more you learn, the more you know what's right from wrong. So when
let me tell you something. My good Judy, my best friend Ricky Mizrahi, he always says, live your truth. And I'm going to tell you something. I know, like, Tony Revlon lives his truth, and Kelly lives her truth. And I'm going to just say this. When Kelly speaks, although she may be loud and boisterous, that bitch is speaking from the heart, and she's speaking her truth. And I commend her for that. When you get on the phone and you're actually correcting somebody for something they said or they're trying to read, you know, you're living your truth. You know, the people that I respect are the people, even if they're reading me, I respect the people who have a voice. I don't respect people who hide behind block numbers and what else do they do? Phony identities.
Or just the people that are, what about the people that don't hide behind the numbers and just hide behind the doors themselves? Or what I have a problem with, which is one of the reasons why I pray to do these interviews, because being as a mother, if I could talk about that for a minute, and coming into a different platform, I get to see crooked things. I get to see things that, no, you shouldn't do that. That's not nice, because you got this going on with yourself. And just because you are a leader or whoever you are and you manage to keep it together does not mean you should be dictating and reading and doing that to somebody else. When you have made a difference and it looks like it, like one of the reasons, like I said, I praise is my mother, because when she reads me, it's totally different. She has a house, she's this, she's that. She has showed me what out of the box can lead to. Then that's one thing. But people is always having comments and everything, and people are afraid. They're afraid to tell their story. They're afraid. How about somebody come to me, I'm gagging, Nicole. I don't know what to do. I got sick. I'm this and that. I want to kill myself. And I'm looking at them like, with all my situation and all my problems, like, well, you know, just pray. Did you tell your mother? You know, this is the type of person
I
want to be.
You try to boost them up and let them know it's not that bad.
Right. And you sometimes you have to tell your own story. You can't sit and pretend, because that child remembers that. That child remembers that, and that child grows up, and he gets to acknowledge now what is real and what is not,
and you, know
you won't be one of them.
Getting back into the box, that's what bothers me a lot with this newer generation, and that's why I always say, you don't have to like me, but you
we
have
a
to
caller.
Me.
We have a caller. 804-397, you live on the air.
How y'all doing?
Hi, welcome
to
the Sister for Real show.
All right. I'd just like to commend you on being as open and honest as you have been. And I just want to know, like, for me, I could count that I have one person had read somebody about their, well, I don't even know if they're satisfied, I did call them sick and whatever, the same third. But also, at the same time, the other day, somebody had put on that so Facebook status about somebody being sick and whatever, and I told them not to do that because, you know, if there's people out here that don't, who's afraid to get tested because of their status might come out positive, and this, that, and the third. And, oh, my God, where was I going? This, that, and the third. And he asked me, why do I care? And I said, I don't really know the person who you talk about or whatever. I don't know who you talk about, so I don't really care about that. But I care about the community and how it affects the community about it. And
that's right.
I just wanted to know, what would you say to people who do find out that they are HIV positive and all this and third? Because it's not a, like, everybody say it's not a death sentence or whatever nowadays. There's so many advances and whatever, but there's still people out here who sees it as that. What would you say to keep them in their head held high and all that?
It's not that day no more. It's not as bad as you think. Some things that we are forced to deal with are to teach us a lesson. It doesn't mean that we are going to die from it. It doesn't mean that you are now a total different person. It doesn't mean that you can't have a lover, because that's not a rule in this lifestyle. Maybe back in the days, but not today. That's not a rule. So I think when people get sick and stuff, they go into the shell and they start downing themselves and they start thinking that they can't do it, they can't tell nobody, you know, they're going to feel different. But they have to remember to themselves that it's not that bad. And because they have no one to tell the story, they sitting there hiding, gagging, not taking their medicine, because somebody's going to see when that next person is hiding and gagging and taking their medicine and doing it in a way where they don't know. So don't allow people to make you feel what your situation is going to do for you. You listen to God and you pray about it, and you will get the feeling of how it goes. You got to know that it gets better. Everything just don't get bad. Once you feel that down and somebody find out that much, and you got no place to go but up. But that's totally up to you. So I say to everybody and everything, if you are a person in that situation and if you are gagging, there's no pity party from you, from Nicole. There is no – okay, 1 minute. There is no I'm gagging for you. You know, sometimes we have to stand up and we have to – another thing my mother was saying, put an H on our back and we have to handle where we are. And we have to decide that, you know, well, I choose to do things this way. And it can be done like that. You can change your situation, positive, unpositive, on drugs, off drugs, homo, molester, anything. You can change your situation.
I just want to say that if anybody finds out.
We have one more caller. I'm sorry. I don't want that. Just didn't notice because I'm looking over from the computer. 917-474. Welcome to the Sister to Sister For Real show.
Hey.
Hello, 917-474.
Hello.
Hello. Hey, welcome to the show.
Hey. I just kind of had a question. I wanted to know what really prompted you to, you know, tell your status.
Well, what prompted me to tell my story?
Yeah.
Okay. What prompted me to tell my story truthfully is the fact that I've been sitting around a bunch of people who judge and pick and deal and lie and read, and they all going through the same thing, and they all have the same testimony, and nobody tells their stories. So no one gives a direction, a good direction for these kids to go into. So my motto has been, in order to get someone to be able to really touch somebody and to help somebody, you can't be afraid to tell your own testimony, because who else better to tell the story than the person that went through it? So, I mean, I sit back, and I'm going to say this, and I will not reveal anything, but I just, a lot of people, and it's a great deal of people that I watch, and I don't think it's fair. I don't think it's right for us to be judgmental. I don't think that, and that comes from my spiritual place. And I used to be judgmental. See, this is why I'm so against. I used to think I had the right to open up my motherfucking mouth. God, every knee shall bow, and every tongue will confess. He has a way of shutting you up. And it's about how you learn from your lesson. I learned from my lesson, and now I'm going to teach it.
That's real. So I don't know. I just kind of want to know, like, when did you have this change of heart? Like, when did you
I've been dealing with this. I've been dealing with it for a long time since I've been so afraid because of the protocol caller. Like, oh my God, this person is gonna feel. I know so many people. I know I don't want them to feel like I'm just worried about what everybody feels, and I'm worried. And I don't know why it's plucking me and sitting on there. Like, you need to tell who you are. You talk and you hear and you helping people about who they are, but why don't they get to really know who you are? So you need to tell who you are. So I decided, and it just didn't come, okay, do this, or can then tell you. We have talked about this for a long time. Letitia can tell you, my mother Joseph, and I went through issues in order to feel like I wanted to be free. I don't want, how am I going to fall in love off a lie? If I can't tell him the truth, how am I going to be able to move effectively and to do it? Now I got the pressure to really do it. How am I going to, so it's like setting yourself up in the way, and I like that because now it's a challenge, and we have to make our own challenges. So I like that. But if I live a lie, how can I ever really speak about the truth? Mm. People are still living at home wearing labels with their mother. I'm just saying, people are throwing balls, and I'm not being judgmental. I'm just asking these people to look, point the finger. Another thing my mother told me, you always point the finger. Point the finger inwards first. And I think that this is my first thought of doing it. This ain't for y'all. This is for me. I hope that it can help somebody, and later on down the line after that, you can come and you can read me and you can say whatever you want, because 9 out of 10, you better shut your mouth, and the other half, you probably already experienced my situation.
Okay. What I'd like to just add to that is that you know when they say when you're about to die, they say that your whole life flashes in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
I think when people get diagnosed as being HIV positive, their whole life flashes in front of them because they think of it as a death sentence, and they say, oh, my God, this is it. I am going to die. Then they start thinking about the things that they shouldn't have did, the people that mm-hmm. they shouldn't have did it with, mm-hmm. and then they start to feel the guilt of what they did. And it's not so much that they are HIV positive that bothers them. What bothers them is the fact that they live their lives so recklessly without having no regards for the fact that they could have become HIV positive. And now that it's knocking on the door, they're feeling ashamed of the way they contracted the disease because of their lifestyle that they chose to live, that they are not ashamed of having it. They're ashamed of people finding out how they got it and that they have it. So now they're going into a mode of uncomfortability with guilt and shame. So they want to leave where they are and go someplace else where mm-hmm. no one knows them, mm-hmm. where they can find a new identity to find mm-hmm. a new way to live. But you have to understand that there is a
God. Or get in drags.
There is a God that comes into your life at the time that you're ready for him. And sometimes he has to do something to you mm-hmm. to make you come mm-hmm. to him. And mm-hmm. when you come to him with open arms and bent knees, only then will you see the truth in yourself and you can reveal it to someone else.
And with that being another lesson, I could, you know, kudos to Joseph Princess, Christian. I want to say really kudos because a lot of things I speak, that's all too much work, she would say. Too many lines, too much conversation, and way out of your responsibility. That happened to you, and that was meant for you to do something, and you take responsibility. So while you thinking about everything you did and all that, see, you already paid for it when you got your papers. See, you paid for what you did. So now if you allow it to continue to destroy you and to make that, then you miss the message. And sometimes God will keep you still here until you get it. So while you trying to make yourself die, you ain't going nowhere. He's going to keep you right there. And to, because if you are the one he chose to be an example, to be the tone, that set, the person to set the tone, then you're going to do what he say regardless. And that's just how it goes. So you can kill, try to kill yourself as much as you want. You ain't going nowhere.
I just want everyone in the community to stop bashing each other and using the HIV as a bullet to hit someone in the heart, because it's not a bullet that you're shooting someone else with. It's a bullet that's going to backfire and shoot you. So let's take that out of the vocabulary. You know, HIV is just like people who are living with sickle cell, diabetes, and cancer. It's a death threat disease, but it can be cured a day at a time, and it can prolong your life as long as you do the things that you need to. So at the end of the day, you know, it's good that, you know, when you spoke earlier, Nicole, and you said how you used to bash people and say things, you know, those vicious slurs, they can make a person go into hibernation and take sleeping pills. Then
yes,
you'll be the cause of their death,
mm-hmm.
not the disease. Sometimes words are a lot stronger than the disease itself. Do we have
if we have any callers that's on the phone line, I am in front of the computer. All the I amers that are listening to the show, you guys have my number. When I'm done, I can't. Something is different where I don't see everybody. I am at the same time. I've seen y'all all hitting me up, and I'm sure it's all good things. But I'm going to get back to y'all. We have 917-474. You back, caller?
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. I got cut off. But I just wanted to piggyback on what R said. You know, those slurs, they do hurt. They do wound. I just want to know, going forward, you know, will you be one of those people, Nicole, to get again wound people with, you know, those slurs about?
I've never done it again. And the only time that I use that with them words and everything is when I know what I know, and I'm trying to get the panel or the people on there to acknowledge, shut the fuck up, you got no right. And sometimes you have to do that. And this is what I want to say to piggyback
on
that.
There is no time that you should have to do that. Nicole.
Well, no, this is
exactly.
What. This is
exactly.
No, but that's what the people sit in front of you doing, and
well,
that's
Nicole,
no time that they should do that. That's not. I've seen people read and call people some harsh things, and I was with them in the hospital. That's not nice. That's not nice. So I want to say this, and I'm going to wait for a second. Let me say this, and I'm a human being. And let me say this. I feel like anybody that is talking about your story, anybody that can tell you something, they have to have a story too. For just the comfort to the people that are being bashed and everything, nobody can tell you nothing about yourself that God didn't tell you first. And anybody that can point out all these issues and things, you need to understand that they have dealt with them things or have been dealing in one form or another, whether it be friends, they know more about it than you can only think. So sometimes you should pay attention. And other times you should disregard when they're being, you know, facetious and mean and stuff like that. But what I do think is that we're not going to make an excuse for people who know what they dealt with. No, that's like you are admitting all the stuff that you did and being homeless and this and that, and you allow us all to bash somebody that went through that same situation that you came up out of it. You couldn't be a part of that. You would feel like, oh, my God, like, wow, like, you know, and for him, you can imagine, and you got these people just doing it. That's not nice. And we should just all learn sometimes
to
shut up.
I'm not saying don't defend the individual who's being bashed, but what I'm saying is don't be an advocate to continue to bash her. Right. Exactly.
Oh, no, I don't ever want to, that's not the way I wanted it to be perceived.
Because
but
you know
I'm just,
what?
I'm a real person
at
the end of
the day.
I've
come down a long, lonely road, and I've experienced a whole lot of stuff that I could read a lot of people about that's going through what I went through.
But you know something, for your
you
situation, I'm gagging at that too.
Let me get it out. All
lonely.
I'm saying is the ones who have been through that dark tunnel and found some light, we have to go back into the tunnel and pull those people through that are still trying to find their way. And that is our job. Later for the naysayers, We need to heal those who are still hurting, because those who are still hurting don't know that there's a better way and that it's going to be all right. And that is my job, to find those few people in the ballroom community and outside the ballroom community to tell them, baby, it's going to be all right. Come on. Let me tell you my story. Or don't worry about what people say. Show them by doing better.
Right.
You've been a phenomenal person.
Can I get
off
the line?
Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah. So I just wanted to know, just going forward, Nicole, like, you know, everyone's got a past. Everyone has a story, whether good or bad. Every picture can't be a good picture.
Mm-hmm.
Every picture doesn't necessarily have a happy ending. Mm-hmm. But can we say here today for all the listeners and for all of those people that are logged on to the site that I'm going forward, that you will continue to blaze your own trail and rise above the negativity and the ignorance? I've already started that.
I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I'm not human and that there's a side of me, bitch, that comes out, and you can hear it when it comes out of my voice. I have tried, and anytime that I do that to the caller, you and anybody, I'm sorry. I'm only human, and I'm just a work in progress. I'm not better. I'm not saved or sanctified, and I haven't been the one that's not going to do this, and I'm not a prophet. And he didn't come and just make me the only person. R.R.'s that person. Kelly's that person. Jasmine's that person. And we all just human. We all just a work in process. I will try my best to be better about it. But I'm not going to sit here and say that I won't let someone have it, or I won't think in my head that what goes around comes around, and oh well, don't cry, get over it. I'm not going
to
say
we all have to make a bitch hold it every now and then. But my point
mm-hmm.
is that something as malicious and vicious as maybe, you know, pointing out to a girl that, you know, she may be sick, or, you know, having a girl confide in you that, you know, oh, you know, I'm saying, this is my situation, and then you take it and you regurgitate it and you give it to someone and you give it to someone and you give it to someone, and before you know it.
Oh, no, I don't know. I don't, those things are not, no. First of all, you're going to jail for that, and that's not your purpose.
When I say, like, you know, giving it up, I mean, like, you know, telling someone, because I think the big reason that a lot of girls don't, you know, want to acknowledge their truth or even investigate their truth is, you know, the fear of, okay, one, having to hold that information. Something serious like that, you know, as far as your life, you have to share that with someone. But they're apprehensive because they don't want it to get out to someone, to get out to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that part of that is a large portion of why people don't want to address their situation.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that anybody that, you know, is fortunate enough to, you know, get a girl's story and be able to, you know, be a confidant, for them to take, you know, what someone has entrusted with them and run with it, you're a very small person for that.
Mm-hmm.
Understand? Because, you know, mm-hmm. knowing that you're sick could very well possibly make you want to go and take sleeping pills, and being taunted about being sick can very
mm-hmm.
well make you want to take your own life.
Right.
All
absolutely.
All things to have to endure by yourself. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, everyone knowing that you're going through that, it's not fair.
Right. Go ahead.
Let's all set a positive example. And, you know, look out for one another. There's enough ridicule on the other side of the fence, but let's just, you know, cover one another.
I totally agree, and for myself, and I'm going to speak about myself. I've been practicing that a long time. I know a lot of stuff, which is what makes me feel that if somebody got to be truthful, I know a lot of stuff. So it's not. I've never. Oh my God! I don't talk and I don't do that because it's not fair. You have to know who you're talking to and when you're talking. And I learned to do that. And I wasn't the person that knew how to do that. I'm admitting that. You know, just blah 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 blah. And you know, I had to tell myself, you know, shut the fuck up. So now that I told myself to shut the fuck up about things that was hindering me and doing that, I'm not going to allow nobody to tell me to shut the fuck up when I know what I do is the real and where I come from in my heart, regardless of what they think. So I don't do that. I think that's horrible. I would have to tell the whole story, because usually when someone encloses that information to me, I go to the extreme to help them. So that I would be talking for years, and that's not what I plan to do now.
Okay, well, it was definitely great speaking with you. I commend you for, you know, coming forward with your story and, you know, to some telling and to some confirming, whatever it may be. It definitely took a lot for you to share that information. So, you know, all the best to you. Take care of yourself. Be safe and, you know, do your thing.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We have another caller, 917-693. You're live on the air.
Hi, Nicole.
Hi, Keisha. I love you very much.
First and foremost, it took me at least 25 minutes to have the courage to come on here to commend you, to applaud you. You know, I've always said, you know, you are the realest B-I-T-C-H in a good way. And the part of the problem is that you are misunderstood. But tonight, Nicole, just listening to you, I think you have opened a lot of people's eyes and ears. I think something hit you, and you said, I have to stop. I need to be truth with myself. If you're going to lead by example and be a good leader, be a good one at it. And I hope that today's show, people all will begin to open their ears and eyes and be truthful with themselves, number one. Number two, I want to commend you because I'm sure you know there's a lot of people that's not being real, not being honest. And I guess you said, you know what, I'm going to be the forefront. I'm going to start from here, and hopefully people will try to teach others and go from there. Am I right or wrong?
Amen.
Nicole?
Amen. Yeah, I'm just gagging. Amen.
And I also, I'm going to keep it real. I had asked a couple of people, I'm not going to say who, because I wasn't fully sure of what you were saying. I was listening, and there was a couple of questions I was unsure, and I didn't want to be rude to come on air because certain things you just don't do. It's just because you know how people are. People are treacherous, people are vindictive, and people are nasty. And that's why in our community, people don't want to be upfront about their situation because you know how we are in the community. We're so quick to say, oh, she's sick, she's dying. So to prevent that, people don't reveal their status. Mm-hmm. But I commend you, and I respect you 120%.
Thank you.
And if there's anything that you can do to tell the community, how would you do in terms of what advice can you give those who are dealing with what you and I say others are dealing with in a positive way?
If you can't be truthful to nobody else, just because you don't tell nobody else doesn't mean you can't tell yourself. See, that's a lot of things. You think that you can't tell nobody else, so you're going crazy. But look in the mirror and tell it to yourself, and look in the mirror and decide what you want to do with yourself. And then when you still can't figure it out, you have to get on your knees, and you have to go to someone who does not judge you at all. And that whatever your higher power may be or who it is that you may pray to, that's where you need to go to. You can't look for people to help you necessarily. And those people that come from a special place, you will know who they are. You will know who you are. So first, everything starts with self. That's what I just tell myself every time. And I'm my biggest critic. So when people think they're telling me about me and if they think a bad sign, you know, when I did what I did today, I'm not concerned. I have came to the point where I'm not concerned. You know, I've came to a point where I know so much and ain't nobody can say nothing about me. I'm not concerned. And bigger than, I'm not worried about what people can say because what they deal and how many people I know and the percentages and all the people. No, it has nothing to do with that. We're going to just talk about me, and we're going to deal with me. I'm not concerned because of me. If I'm concerned with them, I can't see and I can't move forward. I can't stop it and say, you're carrying on, Nicole. Get yourself together. I can't do that because I'm too concerned with people, and I have always been a person that have been like that. Now I really don't care because at the end of the day, I know who got my back, and that would be my Lord and Savior. So what's meant to be is going to be.
You ever heard this saying that once you throw out your garbage, anybody that wants to go through it, they have your permission. So once you tell your story, there's nothing else for anybody else to say. And I'm going to use this young man as an example, and I'm not saying telling his tea because he already told it. But look at Luna. Luna made it known to the world about his status. And guess what? When people look at Luna, all they see is Luna.
Yep.
All they see is Luna. They don't connect him to his illness. They connect him to who he is as a person. Oh, that's Luna. But he's on posters. Yeah. He does HIV prevention. You know, he doesn't care because he's living his truth.
I came to a life where people with Luna, when Luna did it, it was unheard. Today, if
exactly.
It's not being done, that's just my poor dear. That's how I'm at that conclusion. That's how comfortable I am. And like I said, with everything I have done and all the people I've dealt with, and all the people I've dealt with and the things that they were, we all not exempt and we all going through the same thing. So I'm not concerned. I'm really not. You do
well,
whatever
you
want.
Up, listen, you owned up to your truth tonight. And you opened up a new door to how people are going to look at you and have a newfound respect for you. And that's all. You did what you came to do, all right? And you did
and
it well.
And that's the part I wanted to say, RR. What people do after this, I did my part. So, and that's all I can do is I do my part. So we have any more callers because they're saying we got 10 minutes left. I know. No, we don't have any more callers. So, Keisha, if you want to continue to move, speak and move forward.
Well,
okay.
Also, you know, especially in our community, you know, it's two things I don't consider a read. When you say, oh, you old and you washed up, that's not a read in our community because, you know what, people in our community don't even get to be the age of 30, 40, maybe 50. So to call someone old and washed, that's not even a read. And two, to say someone is sick and dying, It is so much in our community, it can hit anybody at any day, okay? And I do believe in karma. Karma is a bitch. I believe in that 110%, because I know people that used to always run around saying those comments, and guess what? They're buying the bullet now. So it can hit anybody, and like Nicole said earlier, it can hit you tomorrow. It can hit you the next, it can hit any of us.
It don't even have to be you that it hit. It can hit a family member because of you.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure everyone on this phone, I'm sure everyone listening, has been affected by a friend, a relative, a close one, a loved one, an ex, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And if one person tells me if they haven't, they're lying, especially in the gay community. You cannot sit there and tell me now, in 2012, that hasn't hit no one yet. I'm sorry.
Well, you said it. Keisha, you're another someone who is very fair, and I respect your gangster. I have a non-tolerance for bullshit, so that's when you get my antics and my cattiness and this and that. I mean, you can talk all you want, bitch. I don't have to pay attention because I don't have to acknowledge bullshit because I see it a mile away because I see my own bullshit.
Well,
so you won't tell me you anything different and everything, and you're a person that's always been real, and you couldn't have said it better, and I appreciate everything that you came up here and said. You've always spoke from your heart.
I say this again. Listening to this show for the past 3 or 4 years, I respected Kelly more. I live for Kelly, Nicole, even RR. Okay, you were people, and I have to say, before I was in the scene, when I was a non-factor, I did not understand. I didn't understand y'all.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't understand him. Okay, I had to get to know him because you never judge a book by its cover. Get to know a person, then you can come to a conclusion. Kelly was another one. I did not understand her, and I got tired of listening to shenanigans because you know how the fags will try to brainwash you and bamboozle you to believe that this person is who they are. But I took upon myself to get to know the person just by being around Kelly in the scene, and even on Blog Talk, I've learned to respect you, all of you, more and more and more the more I listen. I'm going to tell you something, too. No one is perfect. I've taken all your experience, and I apply it to myself, and you know I use it in my everyday work, believe it or not.
Mm.
You can learn from everybody because we're not perfect, and you can learn from every fucking body that you listen to, live up to, read about, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I say this again, I respect you guys more and more and more. And we need more people like you guys, especially in this scene, the gay scene, the ballroom scene, the gay community, et cetera, et cetera.
Thank you.
Well, Keisha, thank you so much for calling in. I love you down. May God continue to walk with you and you continue to be blessed. And I'm just so glad to hear that you're still here and you're still feeling good about yourself. And that's all that really matters because you know the road we came through, baby.
Thank you.
You know, God bless you. So we have 5 minutes, so we're going to start wrapping it up.
Yes. We have 5 minutes.
I'll do my closing comment, and then I'll let you close your show.
Okay.
Nicole, it was a pleasure interviewing you tonight. I thought that it was going to be kind of hard, but I got through it, and now I can see what you go through with your interviews. It's not an easy process, but I want to thank you for giving me the honor and the pleasure of being the first person to ever interview you and you opening up so candidly the way you did. And I just want to say to all the listeners out there, if you haven't been tested, don't be afraid to get tested. And if you've gotten tested and you know your status, all you need to do is stay on your regimens, continue to exercise, get proper rest, eat properly, and remember to always wrap it up. You're not just protecting yourself, you're protecting the person who's with you because they can give you something else that you may not already have. So at the end of the day, it starts with you and it ends with you. And to all the mothers and fathers, icons, legends, stars, and statements, let's lead by example. I am the pioneer icon, the voice of reason, R.R. Chanel.
Thank you, R.R. Thank you so much. Thank you for everybody that's on the phone line and listening to Tuesday nights will be my nights. They will become better and better each and every time. For all of you guys that are in a situation, it's not just about the virus or this. I mean, any situation in your life, you can change it. You can change it. And just because you do this, this, and that doesn't mean that you can't do this, this, and that. It's not what you do, it's how you do it. And you people that are living in secrecy with your own conversation, I'm not here to pass judgment upon you and everything. I just hope and expect and would like to say that people who are not willing to tell their story or willing to be open about it, that they should learn to be a little bit more humble when other people are going about it. In order to change us all in this scene, we need to stop being so judgmental and start going overboard with shade. It's just the protocol of this whole situation. So I did my interview. I am breathing like no other. I feel like I am on top of the world. Yes, I do. I have to say that. I'm not going to do this again because this is not something that is for every diss and going back and forth. You just download this situation and it will change your life. This is the last time I'm going to speak. Now I have to move forward on what I have installed in me because I felt like I couldn't get past it. So when you want to get past what you have deep down inside, tell yourself the truth. I had the courage, and it took me time to be able to tell the truth, period. Although a lot of people who knows me knows my truth already. That's how fab I am. So for this story, I said to those all over, all my kids know, my house member knows, my family knew. It's not gags for none of them. They all knew because I always speak and am real as possible. So that's just who I am. I'm not, if I offended anybody, if I contradicted myself, if you think I come, I apologize. Please, I'm only human, and I am a work in process, and I still will read you, and I still will help you right after that. So wrap it up, you know. And like I said, when you get lonely and you have no place to go, I'm just going to tell you what worked for me. T.D. Jakes, all the inspirational words, all the things that I was able to get some knowledge and wisdom from, praying. Prayer changes things, and you choose your destiny, not this lifestyle, not your girlfriend, not your sister. You choose your destiny. So we all need to start taking control of our life, wherever we at in life. I thank everybody for listening to me. I look forward to having a lovely, lovely, lovely rest of the month with you guys with the interviews and the things that I'm going to be bringing. We're going to go back onto the box topic, living outside the box, next Tuesday. Tomorrow is the state of emergency with the CEO, Jasmine Couture. And I'm going to close the statement because I want to go out with I'm Just Like You, which means very a song that means so much to me. So thank you. Play it safe. Pray to your God and stand for who you stand for, and things will look up for you. God bless everybody, and thank you.
To see. And I'm gonna do everything I said I'll do, making my dreams come true. It means so much to me, you can never understand how I feel when I'm searching for the words to say. when I'm searching for the words to say. And I don't wanna be nobody else. Try to take the time and get to know me, the real me, and you will see, yeah.
Just like you.
I'm trying to take my time. Lord, my strength, which teaches my hands to war and my fingers to fight. Through it all, he's protected me along the way, and I want to thank you, because without you, I'm nothing.